The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
People who receive Social Security benefits are about to see more cash each month, but rising prices could offset the boost. The Social Security Administration says monthly checks will increase by 5.9% next year due to inflation. That's about $92 to an estimated $1,657 for 2022. To compare, in 2021, the cost of living adjustment was 1.3%, or about a $20 increase per month. Roughly 70 million people receive Social Security benefits in America, including retirees and Americans with disabilities.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Good afternoon. It's good to be here with you today. Thank you for joining me. Some good news for you, right? Did you hear that? Social Security recipients, you're getting a bump. You're getting 5.9% increase next year. It's almost a 6% increase. That's, of course, to help you offset inflation and the rising cost of living, which is not that great. So is it really a bump? I don't know. The Social Security Administration announced yesterday that you're going to be getting nearly a 6% increase in benefits next year, and this boost is going to affect nearly 70 million people. All right, it's a pretty big portion of the population, and of course, look, we're dealing with a lot of issues, aren't we? Spike in inflation, supply chain bottlenecks, worker shortages, other economic disruptions as a result of COVID, and I want to be pessimistic. I really hope I'm so wrong on this. I do think that the months ahead are going to be a time for us to be both patient and to be aware that things are going to cost a little bit more. At the end of December, about 8 million recipients of Social Security Supplemental Security Income Program, which is for people who are disabled or receive little income, they're going to start getting their payments. So these checks will be coming to all of you in the not-too-distant future, which is great. If you are not near retirement age, but you've got kids, those parents who are receiving or expecting to get that child tax credit, guess what? You're going to do so this Friday, October 15th. This is the fourth of six monthly checks that are sent out before you receive a $1,500 or an $1,800 payment in April. So in April of 2022, you get, $1,500 or $1,800. That's pretty good. So as part of this monthly child tax credit payment, you should receive either $250 or $300 per month, with the first payments having been sent out on July 15th. I hope you've gotten yours. If you haven't, tomorrow's child tax payment, it should take the total amount so far to be probably between $1,000 and $1,200. The next two monthly child tax payments, as I said, they'll be the big ones that you're going to get. All right. So be on the lookout for them. Be on the lookout for them. And I know some people do direct deposit. Other people do they wait for it in the mail. If you are waiting for it in the mail, it's certainly going to take a little bit longer. We've been talking about a lot that's going on in the culture. That's a little economic news for you. So we'll start with some good news, right? Speaking of money, here's one other monetary issue. I could never understand when I first heard it. There was this big movement after the death of George Floyd, and that was a horrible death to have any man die like that. But there were riots in the streets. There was looting. I see video of stores in San Francisco where people are just walking in and they're stealing. People are videotaping this. The local security guard, the police, they do nothing. You can walk out of there with, as long as you don't steal over $1,000. I mean, it's just crazy. Nobody's doing a thing about it. So, there's this massive movement across the country for us to defund the police. And to me, just logically, I don't care what your politics are, it just doesn't make sense, right? So today, cities all across the country are beginning to refund police departments after this nationwide defund the police movement last year led to law enforcement cuts. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot, she slashed her funding last year by $60 million. If you're in New York, you know how much you got cut too. But Mayor Lightfoot's now, she's singing a different tune. Take a listen to this.
Now, Mayor Lori Lightfoot is refunding the police after slashing nearly $60 million from the department budget.
And the expansion of the officer wellness program for the Chicago Police Department saw incredibly hardworking police officers have the resources they need to recover and heal from the stress and trauma they also experience every day.
Yeah, so a little bit of a different tune from Mayor Lightfoot, and I applaud her for it. I don't agree with everything she does, but I do applaud her for this. I think this is the right decision for the city of Chicago, where I remember last year, I think France had Chicago on a watch list or an advisory list just because of the amount of homicides that were taking place in the city. Or maybe it was 2 years ago, but those numbers continue to go up. Over the past year, crime in our nation has reached, and I'm not exaggerating here, extreme levels. It really has. And that has prompted the shift in you know, policies around the country. In 2020, the largest spike in homicide rates, it's the largest we saw in over 100 years. I mean, the thing was through the roof. In a century, the largest spike in homicide rates in a century, 2020. Are we going to blame it on the pandemic? I don't think so. Indirectly, I would. It's not because people are cooped up. I think it's because they defunded police. They stripped them from the cities. And when you don't have law, when you don't have order, you know, something will fill that vacuum, and that's crime, and that's his violent behavior. The Daily Wire was reporting that between 2019 and 2020, homicide rates jumped by about 30%, which experts say is one of the largest recorded increases in American history. And some are also speaking out now against this anti-police movement that has taken place, you know, all over the country. And even Hollywood elites, guys like Morgan Freeman, I don't know if you heard him earlier in the week, he came out saying, hey, I'm not in the least bit. You know, I'm not in the least bit for defunding police. Police work, he says, you know, aside from all the negativity around it, it's necessary. It's necessary to have them. And most of those guys are doing their job, he says. They're going about their day and they're doing their job. So this concept of defunding the police, we're seeing it's not panning out. It doesn't take a brain science to tell you that, does it? Could have figured that out. So polling shows Americans are generally not in favor of defunding the police. But a couple cities that have done this, Austin, Texas, 2021 budget members, they just restored their police department to the highest level ever at $442 million of funding. Oakland, California, Dallas, Texas, Burlington, Vermont, New York City, their budget increased, they increased the spending there for the NYPD by $200 million, including a $166 million increase for overtime. So they're saying, like, we got to nip this crime in the bud. L.A., Los Angeles, the police department also received a 3% boost this year. So a lot of cities that were all defunding their police have now done an about face. In other news, this is weird. I was waiting for my wife last night. We went out. She had to run out and pick up some groceries or something. So I said, I'll take the ride with you. It was late, right? I'm sitting in my car and I'm looking up at the sky, you know, beautiful night, stars are in the sky, and I start reading my news, and I see a couple stories that got my attention. Of course, you remember William Shatner was on Jeff Bezos' new Blue Origin rocket the other day, and he came down, he was overwhelmed by the experience. He made history, of course, being the oldest man to travel into space. But scientists have also tapped into something else. I saw a news story while I was waiting for my wife. Mysterious radio waves are being detected from space. And astronomers right now, they're baffled by these radio signals coming, they say, from somewhere in the center of the Milky Way. They discovered signals with a radio telescope, and you know, the group of signals suggest maybe, I don't know, a new class of a stellar object. That's what the scientists think it might be. But it's weird, they say, that the signals randomly flicker on and off at irregular intervals. And some researchers detected about almost 2,000 bursts over the course of about 47 days. So that's the largest set of fast radio bursts events so far. They're going to continue to monitor that. Look, we don't know anything about space, do we? I mean, that's the wild frontier. It's a new unexplored frontier for us. The mysteries of God's creation are so vast. You just stare at the night sky, and I see God in the creative order and the beauty of all that is out there. It does make you wonder, you know, is it possible that there are other habitable planets? Is it possible that there might be other intelligent life? You know, we've talked about ATIP, we've talked about the, you know, USS Nimitz and some of the stuff that they've been able to track and some of the unexplained aerial phenomena that has been now documented. The government is now being open about that. They can't explain what it is. Some of these stuff look like foreign objects, don't they? They really do. They look like they're from another world. After seeing this radio signal story, I kind of went down a rabbit hole, and I just found out that there was a Chicago resident. They saw this over the city of Chicago. A woman caught footage of what they describe as a black wishbone-shaped object. And that's what's so weird about these objects, right? Some are cubes, some are Tic Tacs. This one was a black wishbone-shaped object. Could it have just been a balloon floating in the air? Could it have been a government? I don't know. Who knows? This was in the evening sky. She was on a rooftop with another person. Maggie will probably put a link up to this so you can see it for yourself. Is it true that there was a UFO over Chicago the other day? Listen to the reaction, though. I think that's kind of telling. Check this out.
I've never been more stressed watching someone else videotape something. We've already gotten out of view range, but it's like, God, okay.
What is that?
Wait, no, let's think logically about this.
What is that?
Yeah, that doesn't look normal.
It's not normal at all. What is that?
I don't know if I should be concerned or not. Okay, wait, let's think logically about this. I swear to God, it's changing shape.
And it goes on. I love the reaction because you know what? It's like, what is that? That would be my reaction. What is that? What is floating over the city of Chicago? See, they said it hung there for a while, didn't really move, and then all of a sudden it just kind of drifted away without even looking like it was moving. But who knows? Some of these objects defy the laws of physics. We don't know a whole... I spoke to an astronaut once, and he says we don't know a whole lot. You know, we're still discovering some of the mysteries of even this planet. What could it be? I don't know. Could it be an alien? Could it be some astronomical phenomenon? We don't know. In fact, I've been reporting on for you for a long time now, mysterious booms, right? I mean, just as I've been reporting on these church vandalisms, something else that has really grabbed my attention are what rattle citizens awake in the middle of the night. And this happened again the other night. There was a mysterious boom that jolted New Hampshire residents and another adjoining state. It spooked their pets. It prompted several hundred amateur people to go out and online to try to find out what caused this blast. So far, the source of the boom has confounded the residents. Many speculated, oh, it could have been an earthquake. But officials at the National Earthquake Information Center, which is part of the USGS, U.S. Geological Survey, they said that none of the agency's stations have found any evidence of an earthquake in all of New England for the past 7 days. And back to astronaut Tom Jones, there's a lot we probably don't know about the planet. I would lean first towards maybe logical explanations. There are some other theories. I don't have time to go into them today. I've got a lot to get into today's show, but maybe I will. I'll report it in greater detail and just give you a couple theories on what these mysterious shakings, rattlings, whizzing, and booming sounds are that aren't close to military bases and where the USGS is not reporting any weird activity. One other story here, too, that I think is important to take a look at. And as I said, I'm covering this, but I also want to take a look at what's happening with these statues. I heard another sad story just today. For the second time in a month, a statue of Jesus has been defaced. This one in Miami. And, you know, a lot of times I think, okay, this is coincidence, right? That's all this is. It's just simply, a random event, somebody who's not right mentally. And I get that. Or is it possible that it could be something more? Well, just as I was signing on to the broadcast here, getting ready to do the show, I get a text alert from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. And they are reporting that over 100 incidences of vandalism have been reported at Catholic sites just since May of 2020. So you're talking a very short span of time. And the USCCB's Committee for Religious Liberty has been tracking these incidents, and I think they should. There have been incidences of arson, of vandalism, and all across the United States. The one that happened on October 10th marked the 100th incident. I mean, satanic and other hateful graffiti has been scrawled on the walls before Sunday Mass at a cathedral, Basilica of the Immaculate Conception in Denver, Colorado. We've talked about tabernacles that have been stolen. I've talked about churches that have been set on fire, windows that have been broken, statues that have been defaced. And I follow this, and I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this, but I've been following this because of what I saw happen in Rwanda, Africa. The same type of thing took place in that country the couple years leading up to what was a very dark time for that nation. We know that one of the greatest genocides of the 20th century, 21st century, took place in Rwanda, Africa. A million people brutally were murdered. 2.1 million people were forced to flee that country as the Hutus turned on the Tutsis, and they had a civil war. And it was prophesied by an apparition of the Mother of God, who was actually appearing in that country. But just putting it on your radar, when you hear this, I'm not here to make you fearful. I call you to pray, right? That's all. I just want you to pray, pray, pray. That's all we can do. And leave everything else up to God. I do want to talk a little bit of COVID with you today, too. And if you want to join me, here's a number. It's 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Where do we stand with it? Are we getting close to coming out of this? Are you going to need a booster? What about your kids? Are they going to need boosters? Are they going to need shots, vaccinations, I should say, in order to get to school? Governor Greg Abbott said, hey, of all the controversy, I'm issuing an executive order. He did that on Monday, and he stated that no entity in Texas can mandate getting a COVID-19 vaccine. You know, the president wants to roll this out for certain companies. So, and a lot of people are losing their jobs. A lot of physicians, a lot of people say, I'm not going to do it. Therefore, I need to find new work. Here's what Fox was reporting regarding Governor Abbott in the state of Texas.
We are getting some new information from Texas tonight. Governor Greg Abbott tweeting out saying that he has issued an executive order prohibiting vaccine mandates by any entity. He says that this issue has been added to the third special session agenda, going on to say, quote, the COVID-19 vaccine is safe, effective, and our best defense against the virus, but should remain voluntary and never forced. Mind you, Governor Abbott has gotten both shots. He's gotten a booster shot, was also just contracted the virus not too long ago, but he successfully recovered and is putting out this executive order now today, saying that he is barring any of the entities out in Texas to mandate the vaccine.
All right. I'll tell you what. Let me take a short break. When we come back, Dr. Bob Tavali will stop by along with Dr. Stephen Samut. And we'll take a look at the latest twists and turns of COVID, what's happening this week, and ultimately how it's going to affect you, especially your kids. Stay with me. When we come back, that conversation continues, and we'll also take a few of your calls. You can get in now. I know these lines fill up quickly. The number, if you're new to the broadcast or you've got a question, it's 888-914-9149. Hang with me. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Call in now at 888-914-9149. Tell Drew what you think.
Yeah, you're welcome anytime. It's good to be with you. We'll pray the chaplet in about 35 minutes, too. Let's talk about what's happening across the country regarding COVID-19. Some of the latest here. You know, life, of course, takes unexpected twists and turns, but our own personal lives, our lives as a human family, I think the same holds true. We are in a saga, this COVID-19 saga. No one expected that this would go on this long. And I just saw a story that a star NBA player, he's actually now becoming the face of the vaccine mandate resistance. I don't know if you're familiar with a guy who plays with the Brooklyn Nets. His last name's Irving. And he's refused so far to be vaccinated. The problem for the Nets is that New York City has a mandate. It forbids anybody without at least one vaccination shot to enter a bar, a club, a restaurant, a gym, sporting arena, like a basketball arena, and that includes the players. So so Irving basically can't play ball, and his team has banned him from playing until he gets the shot. They're not even going to let him play in other states. So this is, he's willing to forego, you know, you're talking major dollars here because he really has a conscientious objection to this. Just yesterday, a federal judge issued a temporary restraining order barring United Airlines from putting people who have religious and medical exemptions to the vaccine on unpaid leave. That was their strategy to get a workforce in full compliance with the Biden administration mandate that covers all federal employees and all employees for federal contractors, which include all the major airlines. So other federal judges have recently ruled in favor of those opposing mandates, including one in Michigan who said that the I shared this with you earlier in the week, the 17 athletes at West Michigan University, that they could get religious exemptions, and one in New York who said that the state had to allow religious exemptions for healthcare workers. In fact, if you missed the conversation, we talked about these exemptions a little bit earlier in the week. You can go back to our archives at relevantradio.com and check out the podcast. But the religious objection, of course, is that the drug companies made these vaccines either using fetal cell lines or they tested the vaccines in a fetal cell line. And it's been part of the development of the vaccine. And Archbishop Timothy Broglio, the military archdiocese, he said yesterday, even though the church has ruled that it's okay to take them, people can still opt out for reasons of conscience. And if you feel that convicted about it, you must follow your conscience. But those who object religiously, they also often, you know, have practical medical reasons for not wanting the vaccine, like being concerned about the side effects or what will happen long term. So I've invited Dr. Bob Tabali back to the program today, clinical assistant professor of medicine at the University of Illinois and an infectious disease doc. Always good to have him. Check him out at germbusters.com. And also Dr. Stephen Samut. He is he's a professor at Franciscan University of Steubenville, an expert in neurobiology, as well as a pharmacist, and it's good to have him here with us. You could check out him at his own website. Find him online at sammutlab.com. And Dr. Bob, Dr. Stephen, good to have both of you with me today. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having us.
Dr. Samut, let me start with you, okay? One of the objections that we have right now to the to the religious objection is that most modern drugs today, they either use fetal cell lines in development or testing or both. Can you speak to that? Is that true? And if so, does that change the moral equation at all for some who say, hey, I want nothing to do with abortion?
To be honest with you, I can't speak fully in that regard. However, realistically speaking, when we are testing drugs at the preclinical level, most of the tests at the preclinical level actually start in animal studies and not necessarily in cell lines. Cell lines may be an option. However, that is certainly not the only option because preclinical studies are usually started in animals. I can't speak for all other tests. I'm not familiar with that, but that's what I do know. Right.
Dr. Tabali, let me throw that same question to you, though, because I was reading an article the other day that vaccines using fetal cell lines include those for rubella and chickenpox and polio and hepatitis A and rabies. And it is more than likely that just about everybody listening to us who has had, you know, their MMR shot probably has the taint of these aborted cells. So if you could speak to that, as well as with that in mind, should people be as concerned about, you know, your Pfizer or Moderna vaccine, which was simply tested in them? So your thoughts.
Well, your point is a good one. And a lot of people have been vaccinated with cells that have been actually had a closer association with fetal cell lines than does the Pfizer and Moderna. But we have a complex issue of the concern over the adverse reactions to the vaccines in addition to the fetal cell line issue. And then that kind of magnifies or intensifies the person's feelings towards the vaccine. So the Johnson & Johnson AstraZeneca vaccine is basically made in the same form and fashion as the Ebola vaccine. And we never gave that here in the United States, but it was given overseas, and, you know, we all kind of heralded its production. But it also is what they call a vector vaccine, and again, it's you know, essentially raised in a broth of tissue culture, which is, you know, the fetal cells with an origin 40, 50 years ago with an immortal life in the laboratory. So, you know, I personally don't have an issue recommending the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines to people from a standpoint of ethics. I do advise my patients to avoid the Johnson & Johnson vaccine because it has a very close association with its manufacture in a, you know, basically in a broth of fetal cells. They're not fresh fetal cells. They're, again, that 40, 50-year-old immortal cell line. But it, they are made differently. The messenger RNA vaccines are basically printed like you would do a 3D printer plastic model, but they're, you know, it's little amino acids or nucleotides on top of one another attached, and then they were tested initially and tested periodically against fetal cells. Now, I think that the pushback is going to lead to maybe a change in the methodology of how things are tested in the future and made in the future. I can only hope so. Because a lot of the people that I know are not going to back down. If they lose their job, they'll lose their job, and America is going to lose a tremendous amount of productivity because of the vaccine mandate.
Yeah, and no doubt about it. My guest today, Dr. Bob Tabali, Dr. Stephen Samud, and you can join us if you want, 888-914-9149. I'll go to the calls in just a second. Dr. Samud, let me go back to you again. Lockdowns. I'd love your take on that. You went to school in Australia. I've been following what's happening down under, and right now they have some of the most draconian of lockdown measures. They're trying to get out of those in the not-too-distant future. Their population is now really beginning to pick up the numbers of vaccinated. But let's talk lockdowns for a moment, and we can also talk Band-Aids. Have the lockdowns worked, and what do you see as the long-term cost of those?
The lockdowns have actually not worked. The realistically speaking, when we are talking with regards to the vaccines, to a certain extent, we are jumping the gun, because what we are not taking into consideration is the consequences of everything that has taken place with supposedly in order to rein in COVID. And the lockdowns, among other things, have created a significant psychological stress, something that we have known from past studies. So this is not just now. And you can see it with the increased rates of suicide, with the increased abuse of drugs. So long-term, I think we are in for a shock, because we are going to be seeing a significant amount of psychiatric and psychological disorders developing over the upcoming years as a result of what has taken place. If we consider the fact that when you talk about lockdowns and isolation, that even when it comes to the treatment of animals in research, it is strongly discouraged that you isolate animals on their own, and yet you, because of the actual stress that you actually cause animals, and yet you consider what has been done to humanity over the past year and a half, there is a significant concern. There's a significant amount for us to be concerned about.
All right. I appreciate that. In terms of vaccinating children, Dr. Tabali, there's talk about approval for that. And they want to get kids 5 to 11 or older vaccinated. Your thoughts on the need for children to have a vaccination? Because, I mean, what we're going to see end up happening, as California's doing, those kids are going to ultimately have to be vaccinated with the COVID-19 vaccine in order to attend school. I know there's probably a lot of parents out there that are going to have a problem with that.
Well, you know, it seems like we're straying away. You know, our eyes are not on the target of doing what's right and appropriate and scientifically based, and it's actually drifting over towards what might be good. And I'm very concerned that in many situations the risk of vaccination and adverse effect might be greater to children receiving the vaccine than, you know, their risk from getting natural COVID infection. Now, there's no question that children that have had transplants are cancer survivors, you know, with leukemias or lymphomas or things of that sort, or on chemotherapy, or on potent immunosuppressives, or have heart and lung problems, they should get vaccinated because they're at high risk. But your standard, average, normal kid that, you know, needs patches on his jeans, you know, on his knees, you know, those kids that are normal and don't have any significant medical problems, their risk from natural COVID infection is extremely low. And technically, the risks of vaccination, in some situations could be higher for them than just foregoing it and developing natural infection. Now, could that change with a different strain? Yes, it could. You know, we could get a different strain that emerges that is more virulent against children. But right now, so far, the data don't support it. The vaccines really are of most benefit for the elderly, people over age 65, morbidly obese, people with hypertension, diabetes, and other issues like a transplant or cancer diagnosis. But for the very young, it's difficult. And it sounds like so many schools are going to mandate it or your child won't be able to attend.
Yeah. All right, well, let's take a few phone. Yeah, please, doctor. Go ahead. I'll let you respond.
If I may add something to what the doctor just said, if you don't mind, with regards to the vaccination of younger people, an analysis of the virus data actually shows 50% of, with regards to just pericarditis, myocarditis, so heart inflammation, over 50% of the side effects reported are in people between the age of 6 and 49 years old. This is not just something from the virus data. There's been substantial amount of scientific literature that also indicates the potential dangers of young people being vaccinated.
So, Dr. Summitt, let me follow up with that then. We do know about those cases of, myocarditis and others. There's been a number of studies that have been done affecting young men. What's a parent to do if, we get the green light for children to get these shots from the government, and then schools ultimately say, hey, your kid has to be vaccinated before they can come to the classes? What do you think is going to pan out if that indeed takes place?
I honestly am not sure what the answer to that is. However, it would be a sad situation because, realistically speaking, one of the aspects that we're missing in all of this regarding the necessity for the vaccines is the question as to whether they are even necessary in the first place, yeah, given the low infection fatality rate that exists, yeah, with this coronavirus. That aspect is being missed.
I don't know if you're familiar with the Amish community. There's a Mennonite community, a culture in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Dr. Topali, I think you probably are. So either of you, I'd like you to speak to this. My understanding is that the Amish did not want the vaccines, and that COVID tore through their community pretty quickly. And I was reading a report where one of them said, oh, we're glad that the English, as they call anyone who's not Amish, got their shots, because now we don't have to wear masks. They can go back to work. Are either of you familiar with what happened in the Amish community and whether or not the fact that they've not been vaccinated and they allow this to run its natural course is something we can learn from?
Let's say if I go there like tomorrow and stuff like that, that should be...
Well, they don't take vaccines at any level, and there was a polio outbreak in the Amish community back about 10 years ago that was predicated on the fact that none of the children were vaccinated for polio. But they accepted polio vaccine at that time. But that's a parallel to what's happened in Sweden, where I think we all know that they opted to not restrict freedom of movement. They opted not to force vaccination. And at this time, they really don't have a problem with COVID. And Denmark and Norway Finland have actually stopped the use of vaccination and have actually declared that the coronavirus is no more than influenza at this time. So it's no more of a, it's not a vector of importance for public health there. Any more than influenza. And that's really kind of where we're hitting in the United States. I mean, I would tell you today, Drew, after the Delta variant got through with basically affecting everybody in the country that didn't get exposed to coronavirus before, I would say the overwhelming majority of people in the United States have been exposed to coronavirus in one form or fashion, active infection. And I think that we're actually approaching a point where it's really no different than seasonal influenza from this point forward. Mm-hmm. So that's my thought.
Let me grab a call or two for you. Go ahead, doctor, please. Just jump in anytime.
The statistics also seem to show that those countries that actually have had the highest vaccination rate are the ones that are showing spikes at this point. And that's something that needs to be taken into consideration. Realistically speaking, we are seeing a decrease in the efficacy of the vaccines in the same way you see with the flu vaccine. That's because of the capacity for the virus to mutate. In that regard, I feel that the vaccines are actually not really that helpful.
See, that's really an interesting point. And you're right. I think Israel's been 90% of their population has been vaccinated. We're seeing a lot of breakthrough cases there. We've got the Amish community, a much smaller community, but they have reached herd immunity. And to the efficacy of these vaccines, we know that with time due to the mutations, I had read somewhere Pfizer's efficacy rate's down to about 55%. And we're talking about mixing and matching, different vaccines now to increase the efficacy. So you don't see, at this particular point, because there's a big push, Dr. Sabo, to continue to vaccinate people. I mean, the Biden administration's heavy on that. They want employers to kind of be their vaccination police and make sure their employees get mandated. A lot of people are going to be losing their jobs because of this. Have we reached a point where the vaccine is not, I don't want to say not necessary, as effective? I don't know the right words to use to pose this to you, but do you see a diminishing return for these vaccines right now?
Absolutely, in terms of the science, that's what we're seeing in the literature. However, I would go one step further, if I may be so bold, as to say these vaccines were not necessary in the first place and potentially caused more harm. And part of the reason for that is when you look at an infection fatality rate that is less than approximately 1%, and yet when we look at the consequences of everything that we have done that has caused, 30 to 40% increase in abuse of drugs, suicide rates,
right,
and all
right.
of these, the consequences of the steps that we have taken are totally disproportional to what the virus actually is. And as a result, I don't believe that these vaccines were actually even needed in the first place.
And you go beyond that, even culturally, you talk about suicide, depression, you talk about also what it's done to the economy at large. Dr. Tabali, I'm going to let you respond to him. We take a short break. When we come back, we'll take some calls from around the country. You heard his position that the vaccines probably aren't even needed. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think at this point they're needed for high-risk populations, but for the general population, probably not needed. I liken coronavirus being shoved out of a second-story window. 99% of people will survive, but if you're older and brittle, you might not do well. And for some people, it's a life-changing event, especially if you're heavy. But for most people, they get up and dust themselves off and walk away. But for people who get seriously ill, it's a tremendous life-changing experience. And I have to say that I see a lot of people on both sides, with very, very mild infections and very, very severe infections. But high-risk individuals really should continue to get vaccinated.
Sounds great. My guest today, Dr. Robert Tabali, along with Dr. Stephen Samo. I only have maybe 10 minutes at the most in the next segment. So if you want to join us, I know if you're on hold, I'll do my best to get you on. You can get in now, 888-914-9149, giving you the latest on COVID-19 from military, what it's saying, to whether or not your kids need to be vaccinated, to the latest data showing diminishing efficacy rates, and looking at the future, how it'll affect you and those you love. Stay with me. Our conversation continues right after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, coming up 10 minutes, we'll pray the chaplet. Hey, it could be possible soon. Pharmaceutical companies, Merck, I should say, and the other one's Ridgeback Biotherapeutics. They announced earlier in the week that they requested emergency use authorization. Say that three times fast. From the FDA for an antiviral drug that you might be able to take, will help you in your fight against COVID-19. It's an oral pill. You know, you ingest this orally. It's used to treat mild to moderate cases of COVID-19 in adults at risk, or you might have worsening or severe COVID-19, you know, signs. I don't know a whole lot about it, but I think that'd be great, wouldn't it? Be able to pop a pill like that to help you in the fight against COVID-19. Dr. Dabali, I want to jump to the phones, but before I do, very quickly on this new pill for COVID-19, what do you know about that? I know clinical trials found the medicine reduced the risk of hospitalization or death by about 50%, but how likely is that going to get the green light, and what does that mean in light of the vaccine?
It was actually 70% reduction in hospitalizations. Wow. Very, very similar to the experience in Mexico and India of ivermectin. But the U.S. government is buying a bunch at about $750 a course, and it's like three pills four times a day. It's a nucleoside analog, so it prevents the RNA chain of the virus from being prolongated. It's very similar to a previous medicine known in Japan called favipiravir. It looks very much the same. But favipiravir, we know, has had problems with teratogenesis, so it can harm an unborn child and cause birth defects, and it can also alter a men's sperm genetically. So one would think that this medicine, since it's so similar, would be at high risk, although I don't think that information is known at this time. So I would caution anyone who might be of childbearing age that you might want to avoid something like this if that was available to you. Another interesting thing that just came out, I don't know if you heard about it, but aspirin, taking aspirin, they did a retrospective study looking at people who normally take aspirin for heart conditions or whatever. They found that taking continuous aspirin actually led to a 43% decrease in ICU death rate and hospitalizations for patients. So aspirin is actually pretty effective and pretty cheap.
That's awesome. Let's grab a few calls. We only have a few moments left. I know several people want to get in and speak to both of you. Judy is in Oceanside, California. Hi, Judy. Good afternoon.
Hi. I wanted to ask, I'm 63 years old, and I'm very healthy, not vaccinated. If I were to donate blood or plasma, would that compromise my immune system?
All right.
No, not as I understand it. If you were to receive a blood, that actually causes a little bit of a down regulation in your immune system function. But giving blood, there's no issue there. But as long as you're not obese, have heart disease, lung disease, or diabetes or hypertension, those are the major risk factors for doing poorly with COVID. But again, some people get sick out of proportion to the risk factors.
All right, let me take Todd in Lexington, Kentucky. He's got a question about this third booster for both of you. Todd, good afternoon. Hey, Todd, you there? I'll put Todd back in queue. Let me go to San Diego. Maria, good afternoon. You're on the air with Dr. Dabali and Dr. Samut.
Hi, good afternoon. I just want to say I have a son. He's battling cancer. He's on a medicine now that actually could affect his heart. I have not vaccinated him, and I am afraid because I feel like we hear so many people that are double vaxxed and are dying, or the kids are having myocarditis or other heart complications. This is so hard when the doctor says that the kids with immune compromised should get vaccinated. But I see sometimes that I would carry the guilt if something happens if I give the vaccine. So I don't know. I'm more like willing to fight and have him get the COVID and then see if treatment would help. I don't know. It's so hard.
All right, Dr. Samut, let me start with you because you mentioned myocarditis, and then Dr. Dabali, you can follow up.
I mean, given the kind of question that's being asked, I feel it's probably more appropriate, to be honest with you, for Dr. Dabali to respond to, for given his medical background. So I'm going to defer to him, if you don't mind.
All right. No problem. Doctor, go right ahead.
How old is your son?
He's 15 years old. And his cancer has spread to his lungs, so he has something called synovial sarcoma, which and now has, and so he's in a different type of chemo, which doesn't kind of wipe out his immunity, but it's still a chemo, which is very toxic. And so we have to check weekly his card. We have EKGs and all that. So it's very hard as a mom.
Yeah, so, you know, your son would be considered to be at high risk if he were to develop COVID. And you don't know that he's had COVID already. You probably haven't had blood antibodies, or he hasn't had syndrome consistent with COVID. But his age is the age wherein the incidence of myocarditis from the vaccines is higher. In boys age like around 14 to 16 is when it's kind of highest. And it's probably a testosterone-driven effect, because actually the stuff's injected into muscle cells. And at this age, usually boys are growing and their muscles are very active. And the muscles actually make the spike protein that induces the immunological response. So, you know, from a doctor's standpoint, they'd want to recommend vaccination. The Moderna vaccine has significantly higher side effects than does the Pfizer. So, you know, in my practice, I would recommend the Pfizer over the Moderna. But if you were not to vaccinate him, I would definitely tell you that to take an aspirin, he should be on vitamin D, zinc every day, and also an aspirin every day, because these three things have independently been shown to significantly decrease any problem with natural COVID infection. So an aspirin a day, vitamin D3, and zinc every day, if you choose not to vaccinate.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you both for being with me. I want to give you an opportunity just for some final thoughts. And Dr. Samud, I'll let you go first. Pros, cons, anything you want to leave everyone with? What do you want to leave on the table?
I guess what I would say is, given the situation, given the reality of what we've seen with regards to COVID, I am not in favor of the vaccines. The science seems to be against it, and there are significantly milder ways of dealing with COVID. As the doctor mentioned, aspirin, vitamin D, there are several factors that we can be implementing in our lives, allowing people to live life normally, and at the same time protecting themselves and being healthy.
And let me just follow up on that for a moment. So for those who are listening who've had their vaccinations, and a majority of the people in this country are already getting those shots, or they're planning to, if they get the shots, they have none of the side effects, the myocarditis or any other problems some people claim they have, they're in the clear, right? They shouldn't be concerned about anything in the future. Am I correct in that?
If I may refer to scientific literature, actually, unfortunately, I do not believe that that is actually correct, because what the literature seems to be indicating, which I think is sensible, is the fact that we have not had them around enough to be able to say what the long-term effects actually are. So we don't really know.
Thank you. Dr. Tabali, final moments, yours.
I'd also want to say that I'm not saying anything incorrect about the vaccine, because I don't want to lose my medical license, okay, because I got a letter about that from the licensing board. And then if you go to a pharmacy to get a flu vaccine, make sure it's flu vaccine, because people have been getting COVID vaccinations by accident, by mistake. So this happened more than once in more than one locale. But please, if you've been vaccinated, take your vitamin D, take your aspirin, take your zinc, just as if you haven't been vaccinated, because we're seeing a lot of breakthrough infections. And then please pray for me.
I will. Doctor, we'll do that in the chat. And stay with me. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about Dr. Tabali, and we really do need to pray for him. And my thanks to Dr. Stephen Samut and Dr. Bob Tabali. Stay with me. I'll be right back. We'll pray at the chapel.